Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind on this wonderful station, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial in New York City, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, I want to talk about men. Men, yes, it's important to understand men. Men, because they occupy a lot of this world. Big space by the male group. And men, because men are misunderstood. Men are mostly misunderstood by themselves. And men are misunderstood by women. And it's very difficult because I spoke to a man today who said, I'm a very private guy, he said, with a lot of pride. But he also said, I never hug anyone. And I thought about that, and I thought about, my God, imagine being such a private guy that you never hug anybody. That means you have a wall around you that's so big, so enormous, that nobody would come next to it. People wouldn't hug you. Well, I just read a book that does my heart good. The book is called The Elder Within, The Source of Mature Masculinity. Now, this is a book that was about, the guy who wrote it, Terry Jones. Terry's a man who's been found, has found that the elder within, after a long journey, he's been asking other men to take the journey. Younger men desperately need elders, yet find only the elderly. You know, elders bring wisdom in an active state. Well, elderly often bring retirement, which seems to mean retreating and going backwards. What's happening to the elders? The elders are becoming the elderly. When you listen to people in the second half of their life, what do they have to teach? They have to teach the same lousy message that they were taught when they were kids. And the message they have to give generally is tainted by the scars of their lives. So now they actually don't want the young upstarts to be successful because, you know, that's competition as they get older and get prepared to die. I think what's really important is that, as I said, younger men desperately need elders, and older men have a role to play in the society that they're not playing. You see, most men, I think, are burnt out, and they don't know it. Whether they're a success or a failure, most men suffer from the symptoms of burnout. And what are the symptoms? Depression, anxiety, lack of motivation, chronic physical ailments, fatigue from overwork, addiction to alcohol, sex, food, regular bouts of anger at home or at work, alienation. Now, these symptoms, you know, are not acknowledged even to ourselves because we men, having been taught to numb ourselves to our feelings, we keep ourselves away from the awareness of this growing kind of feeling. We're taught to be warriors until we die, gloriously, anonymously, or somewhere in between. We're taught that the mission is more important than life itself, even our life, but we don't know what the mission is. In fact, men need a mission. We've been taught to be warriors now for so long, for the span of 10,000 years, thousands of years. We've been bred and trained to be focused, vigilant, goal-directed. We're good at getting things done, no matter what the cost. The best warriors fight and die for an ideal. The worst fight only for themselves, but still they're all warriors. We're also good at taking orders and being trained by older men. We're willing to fulfill the mission statements of our companies that we work for, the places we work for, the organizations, the communities, because we're also following something, but we don't know what it is. We're also fulfilling the mission of manhood, just as warriors for millennia have searched for their manhood. In our society, being a man is being a warrior. We're taught the ideal is for fighting for the welfare of our beleaguered family and our society. We're on a war footing, always, emotionally, most of our lives. And according to the way we're designed, being a good man is being a good lifelong warrior. How pathetic. The truth is, we've been betrayed. We've been betrayed by the very men who trained us. Our bosses and generals, our political and spiritual leaders, our ideologies have unknowingly betrayed us. The modern way of achieving manhood in our society is not working for us. It doesn't work for us, guys. That's why we die younger. That's why we get burned out. We've been using a training manual for manhood that's flawed and out of date. And we fulfilled our job descriptions only to find out it's been a mistake. And we get a watch after 25 years. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Yes, positive, because I'd like to change something here about thinking about men. About how we men think about ourselves. About women and how they think about us. Probably appropriately so, but we're all trained in this system. Women are trained to regard men as warriors. They pick the best warriors. Give me the one with the most muscles, the most brain power, and the most success. Right? That's what we're trained to breed for. Our training has been inappropriate, and the mission is ill-conceived. Men are being burned out by the mission. The mission, we don't know what it is, but we're being burned out by it. Men are battle fatigued, and we're suffering a pain that our mission won't allow us to even see. Some men feel the pain is a failure of success. They did it all right. They accomplished the mission. They bought the house. They got the cars. They did their jobs. They made the money. Hey, $2 million in the bank. That should be it. You know, that's the highest that most people could reach for. That's the top 1% of 1%. And a lot of guys turn around and say, huh? What for? I'm ready to die. Retirement. Retire to a beach community where you lay by the beach, almost as if you're laying by the ice, as if to walk out on the ice. You know, lay by the beach and hope the waves come and get me. I'm just taking it easy. So I think there's a different way of doing this, my friends, and today I want to present to you some of the options we have. And the options we have is, believe it or not, through consciousness, through awareness. There are many men out there who partially fulfill the mission, but they keep trying courageously while questioning their own skill and integrity. They're not gifted in their assigned training. They're not gifted at achieving all those masculine things. But they question themselves. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? But then they have to hide that they're questioning themselves. So they have to hope to attract someone who will admire them the way they are, but they have to maintain their broken self-status. So you take care of me, and they find women who are codependents while they get stuck, and they say, the only way I can get through this is to get through by being an addict. You know, I'm strung out, I have these difficulties, and I have all these pains, and I find somebody who sympathizes with me. And so we're both lost in this mission. It's a pity, huh, friends? I mean, this is really, if you think about men, and you think about the way men are, you say, well, who's going to take care of the men? Where are men going to learn about men? One thing that we have to be considerate of is that there are men who grow up who do not have a male model. Now, a male model is a man who's a boss, who's a father, who is not a boss, but he's a father. He's a guy who actually parents you. He loves you. He holds you. He cares about you. He admires you, but he doesn't give you a lie to live. He doesn't sell you a mission, you know, that you can't fulfill. And he's not too weak to be present. He's not afraid of your mother, you know, and afraid, I don't want to make trouble, so I just leave the house. And even worse than that, he doesn't abandon you. You know, Michael, I think we will, if you're available there, Michael, I'd like to get Neil on the phone.
All right. You'd like me to give him a call?
Yeah, give him a call right now.
Good. Okay, we'll do.
Well, I mentioned Neil because Neil Chethick has written a book. And he had an interesting thing to say in his book, which I'd like to share with you, about the perception of men and where men stand when they physically lose the presence of their father. So he did a research on this, came up with a book called Father Loss. And I'd like to share what Neil has written about, another one of the people I think who are bordering on finding the answers to some of the questions. The questions are not easy, my friend. Men who act out of the dark elder, you know, I mean, there are some people who are elders who are just miserable, and they become teachers, miserable teachers. Sometimes you're better off without a parent like that. So as soon as you get Neil up, let me know, Michael. So what I'm saying, my friends, is that there are frustrated men, angry at themselves, looking, sometimes taking it out on the loved ones whose welfare they're supposed to be protecting, you know. Still other men give up and leave their manhood and self-respect behind, the casualties of this nonsensical mission. The most compelling evidence for the depth of the unacknowledged burnout is a man's health statistic. The man's health statistic, and I'll be with Neil in just a minute. The human psyche works in such a way that emotional pain is not conceived, is not consciously dealt with, goes deep into the unconscious. There was a Harvard physician and founder of Harvard's Mind-Body Medical Institute estimated that 60 to 90% of all physician office visits in the United States stem from stress-related conditions. Psychic pain leads to physical breakdown, and men's bodies are riddled with deeply driven psychic pain. As a result, men today live an average of 7 to 9 years less than women. There's no reason for that. In 1920, the figure for men was 1 year less. 1 year less than women. Now it's 7 to 9 years less than women. Warren Farrell, the author of The Myth of Male Power, pointed out that a boy infant, as of 1991, is only half as likely as a girl infant to live to the age of 85. I mean, get that. Men lead women in 8 of the 10 top causes of death, and one of those causes is suicide. So, men are more likely, 4 times more likely to commit suicide than women. You know, they have less capacity for joy and spontaneity. Suicide is the ultimate symbol of a man burying their pain. So how does this lead us to the positive mind? Where does it take us? Well, guys, you know, I mean, somebody put a hand around the men's shoulders and say, oh, you poor guys, what are you doing? Where have you been? Let's get Neil on the phone. Neil, are you with us?
I am. It's great to be with you, Armand.
Great, Neil. Nice that I ran across your book just as I was planning to do this program on men. We'll be with you today, by the way, audience, from 1 to 3 o'clock. I'm going to be continuing with this issue. Call up your friends. Record the program. Try to get every man and every woman who's ever been confused by a man to listen to this program today. Neil, let's talk about father loss.
Sure.
You wrote this because you observed something.
Yes, I observed, actually, when I was about 27 years old, I observed the death of how my father reacted to the death of his father, and saw in the moment or the moments after that death just how powerful that connection could be. This was a man, my father, who I had never seen cry in the first 2 to 3 decades of my life, and then here he was in this moment of loss with his own father that it stirred him and moved him down to the deepest core. And in watching that and seeing also my own reaction to it, I got a sense for that, what you were talking about, just how sometimes how much of a disconnection we have with our fathers and how important that relationship really is. So that's why I dived into it as a research project.
What'd you find out?
Well, I found out so many things. I mean, the father-son relationship just is, it's quiet often, but it is deeply important. And at the time that I started working on this book, which was several years after my grandfather's death, I had my own son, and so I was particularly interested in the importance of fathers. And And I just found that when we don't have a connection with our fathers, when we as sons don't have that connection, we lose, we hunger, and we find it very difficult to be the full man that we could be.
You know, Neil, I want to make mention right now, we have many men who are listening to this program because they love the Positive Mind, but many of you men are going to suddenly find that you have an impulse to shut off this radio and go elsewhere and do something else. You're going to feel that cleaning out the wastebasket is more important, because the nature of the pain of the relationship between men and their lost fathers is so intense that men feel themselves having to pull away. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to think about it. We bury it so far. I don't want it. I don't want to bring back that feeling. So I say to you, my friends who are listening, if you feel yourself in a sudden temptation to run from this, stick with it. Stick with it. There's a little piece of growing that happens right this minute, as you could hear and just even let it tremble inside you. Go ahead, Neil. Continue.
That's very well put. And one of the things I learned in this process of researching was I had the chance to sit down one-on-one with dozens and dozens of men and basically ask them to tell me their story. And just as you say, as they started, it was difficult because they had to remember things that weren't that happy. They had to remember painful moments in relationship to their fathers. But as they told their story, and I think that's one of the key realities of healing, as you tell your story, you gain some power over it. It no longer, as you say, trembles inside of you, but it actually comes up, bubbles up, comes out of your mouth, and then you have some ability to see it in perspective. You have an ability to even reshape it in a way. And if your father is still alive, or if you are a father, then you can act in ways that will change that relationship and make you more happy, more content, more fulfilled. And
well, let's go with the fact of the people who lose their fathers first before we give them the potential for healing.
Okay.
Okay, let's talk about, I want you to tell me about what your research was. Fathers who have left their kids, or fathers who are divorced, we're going to call them the missing father. Call that father loss. What is the effect on men as you've seen it?
Well, sons learn about manhood from their fathers. They need that up close, the daily. They need to be able to see this man in their home. And so when that man is not there, whether it's with a death or a divorce or some or an abandonment of some kind, they are hungering for it. And often they'll go looking for it somewhere else. Occasionally they may find a good model or a good mentor who can at least step in some ways. But many times they find someone who's sort of winging it themselves. So what happens is the son, first of all, doesn't feel validated, especially if his father has abandoned him or a divorce has happened and the father doesn't come and visit. That is really devastating to his son because he's not being validated as a male. But also he doesn't have, you know, it's almost, I've heard of it called tuning. You know, there's almost a physical sensation that a boy has when he's with a father where he gets it. He understands this is what it feels like to be a man. This is the sense I get for manhood. But you need that up close. You need that where you can see it and talk to it and touch it every single day. And then you learn how to be a man. You learn how to be strong but still harness that strength with compassion.
Wait a minute, Neil. Yes. What about if your father's just some kind of a dummy, like all other men? What if your father's just one of these guys who are following the old, you know, I think what we get from the presence of a father is that there's a man that exists, and there's a kind of a male feeling, but you know, dads are no wiser than anybody else. There's a maleness, there's something about being a man that helps you feel close, more like a man, more masculine, not masculine in a physical way, but more okay being in this planet by having a male there.
Yes.
But it's not their message. It's not what they teach. It's not what they say, because mostly fathers are dummies.
I don't know if I go along.
Okay, you don't have to. It's all right.
They may not be any smarter than anyone else, but
well, that makes them dummies, as far as I'm concerned. They're emotional dummies because they haven't stepped up. They haven't found that being a part of the ridiculous world is not what the answer is.
Yeah, they've been trained to be a part of that world that you were describing earlier.
Yes,
the warrior world, and you know, sometimes I feel like
you were listening on the internet.
Yes, I was.
Weren't you? It's amazing.
Sometimes
in
I want to
Kentucky, no less.
Sometimes I want to reclaim that word, though, that word warrior, because
sure.
It can be used in such a positive way. You know, I'm thinking this week of Martin Luther King. I mean, that man was a warrior. Gandhi, he was a warrior. These are men who chose to be warriors, but not in the sense of, you know, the sort of classic sense of doing violence or doing damage. So, you know, I think that the male warrior spirit is something to be celebrated, but it has to be, again, harnessed. It has to
be brought
in a direction.
Therein lies the rub, because one of the advantages of having a present father is you rub shoulders with a man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when a man can feel the presence of another man, yes, you automatically feel like there's somewhat of a lively power there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about the ones of the guys who get together in the gym and have posters of Playboy bunnies hanging on their wall. I'm talking about just being able to feel close to someone.
Mm-hmm.
Having a brother is a great advantage, you know, but having a father present, physically present, is an enormous amount, as long as he is not oppressive.
And I agree with that. But, you know, even sometimes, you know, I think about those who have, you know, negative influences, and I think I agree with you if he's abusive. But sometimes, you know, no father is going to be perfect. He's not going to do it right all the time. He's going to have his dummy moments. But if he is present and trying and intending to connect, then even if you have to rebel against him and reject him, at least you have someone to do that with. When the father's gone, there's no one to teach you either what to be like or what not to be like. So it's, to me, you know, even if you are out there and don't think you're a great father or think you may even be not a very good father, your presence in the life of your child is incredibly important, and that he needs you. He wants you to be there, even if you're not there even if you're there in all your imperfections.
We're speaking with Neil Chepik. The name of the book is Father Lost, which I strongly recommend, and we're going to be having Neil further on the program with us. And Neil, I think you're absolutely right. A negative paternal at least gets you a chance to have something to fight back. You know, in all of nature, when the mother is preparing a child to go out in the world, they slap them around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they push them around. They make it not comfortable so that they will go in the world.
Right.
The worst thing you could do is nurture somebody so that they stay at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know a lot of people who have kids who the son, you know, is just not making it at work, so mom supports him, mom pays for his school, mom pays for his living space, and you're not in any way giving this guy a chance to grow up.
Exactly.
We tend to infantilize the men. Having a male presence, even if it is oppressive, as long as it's not abusive,
yes,
I think can equally be important, having any presence, you know.
Yes. Yes, and you know, I learned a lot in talking to these men about the loss of their fathers, to about being a father, and about what my son needs. And one of the things I did learn was about that, you know, that presence, that and as you were saying, even that physical presence. I mean, in a way, especially that physical presence. That's one area I think that men have a lot of growing to do. Is that somehow we think that, you know, touching another man, even if he's our own son, is something we don't, you know, we shouldn't do, or there's something wrong with that, or he's going to, you know, become gay or something. But, you know, it's like that connection, that physical connection that we have with our child has such a positive impact on him. Again, as long as it's a positive physical impact. One of the things when I talk to men is I ask them what were their favorite times when they were a kid. When was their father at their best, at his best? And what they said was when they were like wrestling on the floor, playing catch even, or playing football with each other, or you know, riding on the guy's back, something that connected them physically, because it was as if they were sort of transferring the masculinity, the, you know, what it means to be a man, and validating him as a man.
You know, it's interesting you asked that question. In fact, I'm going to share this with you. If you could think of your very, very best moment that you ever had with your dad, email me that. If you have any of you who have your computers available, go to thepositivemind.com. No, Armand@thepositivemind.com. That's it. Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, @thepositivemind.com. And email me your favorite moment that you remember with your dad. And let me collect some of those. Maybe we'll be able to present them later in the program. Neil, I want to thank you for being with us. I know you're going to be around for a little while longer. We're going to hang up the phone now. Keep listening, if you would. We may be, in fact, let's keep the line open.
Sure.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with you. Now, just to let you know, since the line will be open, if on your side of the phone, Neil, you do anything, it'll be amplified, and we will hear you. So, you know, if somebody walks in and you think you're saying something personal, this has happened when we had people on hold, we learn great things about their personal lives.
I'll be careful.
Okay, so thanks for being with us. We're going to take a short break. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a Positive Mind. Oh, you know, this is such heady stuff. Let me play something for you. That's a male story. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a Positive Mind. It is just about 1:29 at WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial.
Absolute control over every living soul in that sense.
Leonard Cohen. I hope you're listening in, Marty, one of Marty's favorites. 212-209-2950. We were listening to Leonard Cohen. Leonard Cohen's voice and his album, The Future, touched me because he kind of ripped into the heart of being a man in many ways. But, of course, he says the solution is love, which I don't think it is. No. I don't think the solution is finding a mate. I know you're still with me, Neil.
Yes, I am.
You've been enjoying the music.
Yes, I have.
Are you familiar with Leonard Cohen?
Not very familiar, no.
It's something you might get familiar with. It's kind of interesting, especially related to your work. Mm-hmm. He's got a few albums out that are really wonderful. But one of the things I found, Neil, and I would like you to talk to this, about men and their sexual predilections following the death of their fathers. What I found, and I don't know if you've seen this, is that when a man has a missing father, he frequently becomes a womanizer and goes into compulsive sexual hunting for, and it seems like all he wants is women. They usually don't have any male friends, and nobody could figure this out. And you could find it generally among the greatest womanizers is they don't have their dads available.
Yes,
so,
I did.
What did you think of that?
I did find that as well. And sometimes even after, you know, when they're adults and they've lost their fathers to death, they will go through a period where they are seeking out women. I think, you know, most of my research is asking men to tell their stories, and as well as I do some statistical research. But when I asked men about that, it was very hard for them to figure it out. You know why?
Yeah, and I think we did. I think we did find something at the bottom of it.
Yeah, one of the things that I found was that they are trying to, because of their lack of connection to a man, they're trying to prove themselves as a man. They're trying to show, well, if you know what makes a man, well, it must be his ability to have sex with many women, because that's one of the things that our culture tends to push upon us. I also found that a lot of men who didn't have fathers really worked particularly hard, were very ambitious. As you were talking about earlier, they really needed to succeed in order to feel good about themselves.
Well, wait, let's go back to the first one.
Okay.
I think we found very similar things, because what I found is the following, and here's what I speculate on. When a man doesn't have a man in a father, and he doesn't know how to find it, he looks for the semblance of malehood inside himself. And I think what you're saying is it makes him feel like a man, but making yourself feel like a man frequently means it makes me feel like my father. It makes me feel like my image of my father. So, in effect, men who are compulsive womanizers are searching for their fathers. And the way they're searching for their fathers is through this compulsive sexual activity. I'm going to feel like a man. I'm going to feel like a man. I'm going to feel like a man and therefore connected to my father. And because the whole essence is about self, because the whole essence is a man to feel this inside himself, of course he discards the woman afterwards. He doesn't care about them. It has nothing to do with love or being loved. It gets to how do I feel my best masculine self. And that's what we discovered about men when we were doing research here at the DeMel Center. Then when we looked at women who are menizers, we found the very same thing. What they're searching for is they're searching for their mothers. They're looking to feel the woman inside them. And the interesting part about it is a man who is a man, who a womanizer, rarely has close male friends. Just as a woman who's a manizer rarely has close female friends.
Yeah. Which makes you think that one of the ways to work toward healing is to, if you are a womanizer and you recognize that your relationships are one after the next, you're discarding and going on to the next and then not being fulfilled in that relationship, is not to seek more women contact, but to seek male contact.
Yeah, and you're not a therapist, and you
No. You
have seen this in force. You've
Absolutely.
Seen people working at this.
Absolutely. Men's groups is one of the best ways for men to to grow and to feel more solid within themselves as a male, to be around other males. You know, one of the things that is so true, and I'm sure you've seen it many times, and I think you even talked about it earlier, is that when we live in this world as men, we don't show our vulnerability. We don't allow ourselves to be weak in front of other people. We don't allow ourselves even to be sad in front of other people. But when you get in a group of men, whether it's in your, you know, religious institution or there's, you know, many other, or in, even in a psychotherapeutic setting, there's a place to hear what other men really think, hear what their real experiences are, recognize that you're not the only one who has difficult times and you know, feels sad about things and is afraid of things. And once that happens, it kind of opens you up to expand the definition of masculinity and expand the options for you to be a man.
Neil, I'm very impressed by your knowledge and information, because you usually, this is what people have studied years, have gotten to. And
well, I have studied years on it, actually. You know, just to give you a little background about myself, I've started writing a column about men's issues back in 1992.
Wow.
So I was one of the early journalists, at least, who was focusing on the male side. You know, feminism has sort of raised women's awareness, and as that took full hold in our culture, men were kind of looking around trying to find a place to grab onto. Well, now that we live in this different world and women are different, who are we as men? And I started writing about that in the 90s. I wrote this book, Father Loss, came out in 2001. And then after that, a second book called Voicemail, M-A-L-E, on men and marriage, how we deal with our relationships. So,
well, I want to talk about that with you in just a moment.
Sure.
While we're at it, you know, the thing about man finding male bondage, getting a man to go to a men's group is a very difficult thing.
It is.
They will, as they're walking in the door, they'll get a phone call and they'll say, oh, I can't be there this week. I can't make that appointment. It's a very considered weak thing for men. Now, I run men's groups, or I have run men's groups, and I find the men very committed, but very difficult for them to gather in it and to admit it to themselves, number one. So they found a solution. When a man is missing men, one of the things that he does when he gives up on having a father, he finds drugs. And I think that drugs, and part of what drugs do, is they help you bond with other men around drugs. Mm. I think alcoholism has a lot to do with being at a bar and sitting around other men. So then, not only that, but we found the cure for alcoholism is what? It's men. It's going to AA meetings where you're surrounded by men who are talking about their real self. Mm-hmm. Narcotics Anonymous does the same thing. You go to 12-step programs where you are hanging out with other guys who are saying, yes, me too. And I think the cure for alcoholism, being AA is so effective, and the reason they're effective is they reconnect you with your missing father.
Yeah, that's a profound thought. I you know, my own experience in men's groups was and has been, and I continue to be in a men's group now, the same one now for 10 years, is the first time going to that group, just being almost slack-jawed, open to seeing men who are willing to, you know, be real. And it's so hard to find. You can't do it in most workplaces. There's such an attack against men when they show vulnerability that you have to find like-minded men. It sounds like you're doing those kinds of groups and leading them and facilitating them. And, you know, I especially recommend that men who are, you know, struggling with their own fathers have that opportunity to be with other men who can father them, you know, even same age men or even younger men. There is a fathering energy that can come through, and we can do that for each other. And that there's almost a men's community that can rise out of that. That's an empowered men's community, not one that's sort of looking for external ways to prove themselves.
Armand DeMille here with you at WBAI. Our telephone number is 209-2950 for the sake of this. Because we are raising money. Because we are here to help you, help yourself, and help us exist. And so what we are asking you to do is make a donation to the station. If you've just tuned in for the first time, we've been talking about men. Over the last few years, men have stepped forward to point out the fact of men's burnout and to question its cause. And now medical doctors are questioning the health statistics and showing us that there is just something wrong with the way men are doing it. Addictions are a major sign of a man struggling with the pain of just burning out. As you'll see also, addictions are also a major way men treat the most significant sign of burnout. This is under the radar, low-level depression that slowly drains a man of any natural good feeling. And you know, a man's depression is so silent. It creeps up. Even his own wife just notices his spirit leave. And that's a little what it's like. You watch the spirit leave a man. At first he's young and he's energetic and it's all there, you know. And then, but after a while, as he begins to see that the plan's not working, that he's not getting what he wants, that he doesn't know how to handle the relationship with his mate, and he doesn't know how to talk, and he doesn't know how to, nobody taught him what to do under stress, and nobody teaches him that when he's a father, he's going to be going through certain things, and nobody teaches him that when he has babies, that suddenly he's going to be spending his whole life as a second citizen. You know, for a little while, the baby's going to get the preference. And you say, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? Well, I guess this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to nurture this child. And so they give you a little equipment for that. They give you this pride in having a son, or the pride in having a daughter, which is supposed to replace the fact that you're desperate for some kind of nurturance. Marriage is a difficult thing. Marriage for men is one of the most difficult things they never anticipate. You don't get a book on it. Nobody comes along and says, here's how you, this is what you do when you get married. So, Neil, you're still with us. I want to take advantage of the fact that you're here. Let's talk about men in marriage.
Yes, be glad to. With my first book, Father Loss, I went out and, it occurred to me, as you were just saying, that men just don't have the opportunity to talk to each other, or the inclination to talk to each other, or really the sort of personal freedom to talk to one another about marriage. But again, I thought there are so many stories out there that I've heard between the lines, between the cracks, that I thought it was worth it to sit down with men, assure them of anonymity, and then ask them to tell the real stories of their lives. And so that's what I did in my second book, which just came out last year, called Voicemail. And it was a eye-opening experience again. Men shared, you know, there's so many things that we think about men. I mean, one of the first that people are always talking about is that men are commitment phobic. And yet, you know, 90-plus percent of men get married at some time in their lives. And, of course, all the men I interviewed were married, and they were highly committed to their relationships. They were sometimes desperately committed to their relationships. And, in fact, more of them wanted to stay. I just saw some recent study that showed that a percentage of women, about 35% of women, said they would not necessarily marry the same woman again. But in my survey, which was a scientific survey, more than 90% of men said that they would marry the same woman again.
That's a very important thing to think of, where women's choices are very often based on security, and let me just go for what looks like will be a great provider, where when they uncover what they are with and find themselves ill-equipped, they very often would not go back to the same husband. But men seem to love almost forever.
Yeah. And men really make the choices with something, with a combination of emotion and rationality. I'm not saying women don't, but I studied men, and what I heard was that, yes, there's this, of course, physical connection and desire that comes at the beginning, but when they're looking for someone to actually spend the rest of their lives with, they're very careful about who this person is. And interestingly, they told me that the two things they look for above all else when it comes to personality is a positive interestingly, your show, a positive sense, a positive optimism, a sense of that the world is good, as opposed to something to be fearful of. And then the second thing they wanted was self-confidence. They wanted a woman who believed that she was worthy, that she was of value and could give and deserve to receive. So sometimes we think of men purely in a, well, they're obsessed with sex, and if she looks great, that's going to make all the difference. But when it comes to long-term relationships, men are very careful and look very closely at what this life is going to be like.
And what do you find as a result of a man's consciousness on a marriage? What happens when a man wakes up and he suddenly says, hey, wait, this is different than I thought it was? How does he change in his relationship with his wife?
Well, you know, that's another thing that men often think about men, is that they won't change, or you shouldn't try to get a man to change. But again, in my survey, I actually asked men, has your wife changed you since you've been married? And more than 60% said yes. And in fact, almost 90% of those said that they had been changed for the better. So men do see that once they get married, there's still going to be a need for change, and they are willing to do it. Now, sometimes it's not in the same style that women would like to change. Sometimes it's not at the same speed that women would like to change. And some men, of course, are resistant. We're probably all resistant, but some are, you know, particularly resistant. However, most men, I think, are willing to make changes and do things differently in order to have their relationships succeed. You know, we think of things a lot in failure and success, and men are very averse to failure, and that goes to marriages as well.
So you think that men do look at themselves as having potentially failed marriage?
Yes.
You know, I wonder who holds on stronger nowadays. I wonder if anybody tried to figure out who's holding on stronger. Is it the man or the woman? We always think of the woman as the dependent type.
Yeah.
I
think it's the man. I really do. I think that once they're into the marriage, so, you know, it's harder to get a man, or it's harder for a man, or it takes longer maybe for a man to commit to a relationship. But once he's in it, there's a sense, I think it goes along with the sense of, you know, failure and success. Another thing that I've noticed is that men told me that their relationships didn't have to be perfect. There was a certain acceptance of problems. And for men, they would often say, well, those, you know, there's enough good to make it worth it. But I think some were frustrated because the women would say, well, there's good, but there's also some problems, and I want to work on those and make those better. And so sometimes men will sort of say, but why isn't this good enough? And so I think men will hold on more. They want it to work, but they get frustrated with the need to make everything just right, make it all, you know, fantastic, and you know, keep working toward perfection.
You know, I was talking to a couple earlier today. I had a session with a couple, and I watched, as soon as the woman was feeling upset about a reality that she was facing in their relationship, he wanted to take the pain away. Mm-hmm. It's like his job was to get her to not feel what she felt. Part of what happens in growth is people sometimes have to let go of their illusions.
Mm-hmm.
And as they bust their illusions, they get closer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's part of the way of getting closer is to say, let me have my feelings. I'll let you have your feelings. My job is not to stop you from feeling things.
Yeah, I think what the job, he may see it differently and think, my job is not to stop you from feeling, but to fix the problem. So how can I fix the problem? And, you know, feelings are more difficult to grasp, particularly for men, because we grow up without access to our feelings, a lot of us. You know, we're told, don't cry, don't you know, be afraid, don't get sad, just be more even keel. And so we become kind of the pillar or the rock, and people are supposed to look to us. And if we see something, quote unquote, broken, we try to fix it instead of just letting that happen. You know, if our wives or girlfriends or women in our lives want to say to us, I have a problem, I'm not feeling good about this, we tend to move immediately into fix-it mode rather than just letting her say what she needs to say and work it through herself and allow her to take responsibility for herself.
I think that a lot of it has to do with men's, you know, the difference I always consider is the difference between a boy and a man is that boys are always avoiding pain. They only go for the pain that they create. So if a boy wants to do some weightlifting and it hurts his body, it's okay. He creates it. If a boy wants to punch himself in the arm, it's okay because he created it. But pain itself is to be avoided at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this in young men. You see men who are dashing from one thing to another, who are staying out of relationships because they want to avoid the pain.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between a man and a boy at that level of maturity is the man is willing to face the pain. He said, I know it's going to hurt. And I'll go through the hurt. It's only pain. Mm-hmm. And that's what men do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have somebody who you lose, or if you lose a job, or you lose someone close to you, or if something happens, you're willing to feel the pain of it passing. And that includes if you realize in your relationship with your mate there are things that you can't have, go through the pain of that.
Mm-hmm.
And if your mate goes through something and a realization that she can't have certain things, let her go through it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't take away the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Be there for her,
mm-hmm.
but
you know,
don't
take
it away.
I think on that point, something that is related more to the first book about, you know, losing a father, that what I found was that men, exactly what you said, they are not wanting to face the pain head on. But I did also, in talking to men, find that they found a successful way around that. Not all, but some men found a successful way. And I've sometimes visualized it as a sort of matador. You know, the men will allow whatever is painful to come at them, but then they'll step aside at the last minute and have it sort of go by. And then they'll turn around and that bull will come again. But instead of taking it head on, they'll let it come by. And sometimes, like with the loss of a father, what I found was that if they let it come close and feel a little bit of it, just like the brush of it, and they do that again and again and again, that it has a little bit of the same kind of effect as hitting it all head on as well. So what I found that is that there was that men took longer. They took longer to get through pain because they sort of chipped away at it in very small pieces rather than taking it on all at once. You know, this is not so much what men should do, but it is what I found that men actually do.
I hear you. And Neil, I know you've got to be off. I thank you so much for spending your time with us. We're going to have you back on air, and then we're going to get some books from you, which we will not process now for our next fund drive.
I would love to do that. And if I could invite your audience to come visit my website, probably the easiest way is to go to fatherloss.com. Just one word, father, LOSS.com. I'd love for them to give me feedback and take a look at closer look at the books that I have.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Armand.
Right, bye-bye. Isn't that nice? You see now the other thing I get. I love talking to men like Neil. I have this experience with certain men who are voyagers. And we don't have to be so smart. We could be... Oops. Yeah, I know. No, I understand that. That phone call sound, what you're hearing, we're going to be right back. I understand what's happening over at the studio at WBAI. We'll be right back with you, my friends. Here's a little music for you.
Although you say we're through, I'll always love you. You know you can depend on me. Although someone you met will make you forget, you know you can count on me. I wish you success and loads of happiness. I must confess, I'll be lonely. If you ever need a friend, I'm yours unto the end. You know you can depend on me.
Well, we seem to be having another one of our engineering difficulties there, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. I'm back. I know we had that there, didn't we? It's a funny thing. Funny thing happening. So we're here at WBAI bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And what are we talking about today? What's going on today? We are trying to bring you some wonderful stuff. 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You began hearing Dave Brubeck and Jimmy Rushing. Jimmy Rushing's another one of those, you know? I mean, he did this beautiful song. Maybe you could hear a piece of that right now. He did this beautiful thing. I'm gonna put this on, let's see if it gets to you.
You keep going your way, I'll keep going my way. River, stay away from my door. I just got a cabin, you don't need my cabin. River, stay away from my door. Don't come up any higher, I'm so all alone. Leave my bed and my fire, that's all I own. I ain't breaking your heart, don't start breaking my heart. River, stay away from my door.
That's Jimmy Rushing, one of my oldest favorite combos, Dave Brubeck in the background. But when Jimmy Rushing sings about river, stay away from my door, he's talking more than about water. He's talking about what it's like to feel invaded by potential love. After a while as a man, you know, you start saying, stay away from me, love. Just stay away. Don't mess with me. You know, I'm not messing with you anymore. I don't look for love anymore. And some men retire to a loveless life, just kind of holding their time, waiting to die. And I think that that's part of what we're dealing with today when we talk about men. And we talk about the plight of men and what men have to go through. Because the worst part about men is when they quit. When they can't find the solution and they say there is no solution. So I think I'll just die. And you can't imagine how many men feel that way. I think I'll just let it pass me by. And you look at them and you say, oh my gosh.
You keep going your way, I'll keep going my way. River, stay away from my door. I just got a cabin, you don't need need my cabin. River, stay away from my door. Don't come up any higher. I'm so all alone. Leave my bed and my fire. That's all I own. I ain't breaking your heart. Don't start breaking my heart. River, stay away from my door. Stay away from my door. River, stay away from my door.
How many of you know somebody like that? Stay away from my door. You know, you get confronted with that, and that's the man in despair. You know, so that's what we're doing here today, my friends. We're talking to men. We're talking about men, and we're talking for men. Yes, when somebody breaks down, they get attention. Not men. When they break down, they lose attention. They turn it into a physicality or a lifelong depression. You know, and they just kind of fade out of sight. And of course they die 8 years earlier. Why not? They don't have options. 212-209-2950. Here's an option for you. Get somebody a copy of today's program through, well, not even the program. Get the series of programs called The Series on Men, which discusses all of the things I'm talking about today. 212-209-2950 for $125. You can get these 10 CDs, which are beautiful. Just beautiful. And any women who are looking for men, or men looking for men, if you want to look for equality, look for strength, sensitivity, and calmness. But get all three of those. Strength and calmness. You know, the strong, silent type? Not silent where you're being quiet because you're afraid to speak. By being silent because you realize that most of the words that are being spoken are meaningless. Talk to what's real. Talk to when it counts. 212-209-2950. Learn about this stuff, my friends. We've got a few more minutes with you today. We're going to be talking more about initiation and malehood. You know, how do we do it? How do we become men today without any rite of initiation? Is the lack of a true right the reason? Well, you know, a lot of this has to do with, the elders. And I'm going to go back to, we started talking about the elders a little earlier. Men as elders are not very good at it. Nope, they're not. Because most men, as they become older, they kind of set up a competition with the younger men. Conscious elders are made. They're not born. I'm an elder. And I'm certainly not an old guy. And I'm not elderly. I mean, I may be elderly in my body. Sure, I got some broken parts. You know, I move slower than I've ever moved. But conscious elders are made. Men need initiation into elderhood as well as they do into manhood. Men need to go through the spiritual, psychological, and physical transformation that the initiation into elderhood requires. The big question is, how many unconscious elders are there in this culture at this moment? And how many are there to teach you? There are very few. So who do you take as your teacher? You know, it's not you go searching for an elder teacher. You have to become one. And to become one, that means you have to go through the rite of change. Men have been informally initiated into manhood by life's initiatory, the initial experiences. But there's this man inside of you. There's an elder pulling on the inside of you that's wise, that knows better all the time. And as we grow up, we get to see this. We get to feel it. I know better than this. I know better than yelling. I know better than speaking down to somebody. I know better than speaking about somebody badly. I know better than that. I know better than being a sourpuss. I know better than ignoring my children. I know better than putting up with a job I hate doing. I know better than taking home the stress that I carry with me all day long. I'll never forget the man who had this description of his house. And he said, I have my house. He said, and then I have my hook on the outside of my house. And I said, why do you have, the question was, I didn't ask it, why do you have a hook on the outside of your house as opposed to inside your house? He said, because before I walk in my house, I want to take off my coat and leave it outside with all the stress that comes with it from the outside. He said, because I want to bring into my home, I don't want to bring that stress home. If you're looking at a husband or at a man or a man, you're looking at somebody who's just carrying all this stress with them, you're doing it wrong. He shouldn't be carrying it in the house. You shouldn't be working with it in the house. Get some help. Get some help. Help is around, you know? I'm not going to promise you a pill, but just get to talk to somebody. Get to be able to shed that burden. Get that burden off your chest. Imagine being able to, I remember once when I was younger, I met a man named Russ Goings. Russ Goings was a lineman for the New York Jets. So this is a big guy, 300-pound guy, all muscle, big, huge, 6'5" or something like that. And I'm talking to him, and I, you know, I weighed about 220 at the time. And I'm talking to him, and I said, hey, what's it like? And he said, come here, let me show you. And he lifted me up. He picked me up in his arms, and he held me almost like a baby. And I was shocked. As a man, I was shocked. What man ever gets held like this? What man ever gets picked up in his arms? You know, I had the image of, oh, my God, what are they going to think of me? Am I being a man? And being held was such an amazing feeling that maybe I didn't have that since I was little. And to think of it, to think of the ache that came out of my body when I felt that feeling. And Russ put me down, and Russ was a very wise man. He just smiled. I've had a few really wise men in my life. Dick Ward, Richard Ward, was an actor. And he was in a thing called Ceremonies for Dark Old Men. He was also played the father in The Jerk, the film The Jerk. He played the father. Richard Ward was this consummate black actor who lived next door to me when I was a kid. And he had this thing, he had this smile that kind of crackled. And whenever I would be going running in and out of my tenement on 10th Street in Manhattan, every now and then, no matter how bad things were, there was Richard with his smile and a crackling smile. He was beautiful. And he was the one who started taking me around to jazz clubs to show me the other side of life. A little later than that, I ran into another man, another musician named Bill Barron, who's brother to Kenny Barron. And Bill Barron lived next door to me when I lived alone on 6th Street. And he was another one of the elders. He was another one of the wise men who kind of looked at me with a calm, beautiful look on his face. And he said to me, it's okay, kitty. It's okay. No matter what I got upset about, he kind of looked, it's okay, kitty. And I don't know why they both said the same thing, but they did. It's okay, kitty. Well, that's the kind of elder that I picked up. That's the way I feel towards men. It's okay, kitty. I understand. 212-209-2950. As my voice retires for a moment, I give you Jana.
Thank you, Armand. That's 212-209-2950. That's the very important number for you to call today to support WBAI and to support the Positive Mind and Armand DeMille and all the amazing work that he's doing for all of you. That's 212-209-2950. For $125, you get the series on men, a series put together by Armand, and a very wonderful, helpful series. I think it is really some of his best work. So please call today, 212-209-2950. For $125, get the series on men. For $100, you can get 6 CDs on relationships that Armand put together. That's another really fantastic thing that he put together. And that includes one DVD. For $100, 212-209-2950. And for $75, call today and get 2 tickets to see Home, the movie, on March 1st at 7:30 p.m. at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. That's 212-209-2950. For $75, get 2 tickets to see the movie Home. Armand will be there, and to follow the movie will be a Q&A with Armand. So meet Armand. The opening at the Walter Reed Theater was fantastic. Armand talked to everyone there, and there was a Q&A, and it was so interesting, and it was fun, and we all had a really, really great time. So please show up on March 1st, but please first make your phone call. That's 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Thank you so much for your support today. We really, really appreciate it. And we need you to keep the show going. So please, these last minutes of the show, please call 212-209-2950. For $75, you can get 2 tickets to see the movie Home at the Brooklyn Academy of Music.
What a sport you are, Johnny. You're amazing.
Thank you.
You have such good spirit. You do such a wonderful job here. I think you and Paula Jack, who is our office manager, and
thank
Paula
you,
helps run the show. And thank you, Paula, by the way, who's does everything, chief cook and bottle washer. And Jana, who helps get us some of our talents here, and associate assistant producer
thank
as
you,
well.
Armand.
You know, 212.
And thank you, Armand. You do the most amazing radio. You do great radio, Armand. Thank
yeah, you.
You
love being a part of it, right?
I do.
You don't just come here to make the deposits.
No.
212-209-2950, my friends. It's an opportunity right now to make a difference, you know, show this station, because if there's going to be any growing up for the men in the society, they've got to follow something other than NBC, you know, and CBS. They have to know something about reality, about real people, about the real business. And I think that's what we offer. We offer that. We offer the station is part of the maturation, the new way. I mean, what are we? You know, when we say it's a peace-loving station, it's an anti-war station, WBAI. How much more dedicated could you be to a new ethic than to put that out there as saying Pacifica? P-A-C-I-F-I-C-A to mean peace. Pacifica Radio, W-B-A-I. And that's what I'm a part of. I am so proud to be a part of this station. I am so proud to do whatever I do. And I give away these consultations to the station. I give them up to 100 hours a year of my time, just so that you could come and see me and that you could get this and make the donation to the station. 212-209-2950. Join me. Join me in supporting the station. Join me for supporting what we believe in and some kind of a truth, some kind of a future to this society. 212-209-2950. Make your calls right now, my friends. Remember, there are premiums you could have, but the most important premium is a little gold star you put on your heart every time you support something you love. And if you support this station, a gold star for you, my friends. 212-209-2950. Anything, a donation, or get yourself a goodie if you want. And the goodies, $125, 10 CDs on men. Get them for yourself. Get them ready now for your next Christmas present. A Valentine's gift for a man you love. You couldn't think of a better one. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. $125. The 10 CDs on being a man and what it is. And for $100, you can get the one on relationships. You got trouble in your relationships, you can learn about it. For $100, there are 6 CDs. These are not available online. We've held these off because we want to use these to donate the money to the station. But if you go to thepositivemind.com, there's a lot there that you can hear. Endless hours of work Tom Gerby put together for us in creating this wonderful website that's heard all over the world. All over, everywhere you go. 212-209-2950. 2950, my friends. We're going to just got a couple of more minutes for you to go with right now. 212, and remember, for $75, the two tickets. The two tickets. Oh, my gosh, those two tickets. Two tickets to see the movie BAM, to see the movie Home down at BAM. BAM is the Brooklyn Academy of Music, a phenomenal place, and there we're going to be gathering. We're going to have a WBAI be-in around a film with Woody Allen and a bunch of other people and me, and get together with us and join us. $75. Make your calls right now. The calls will be, you can make them over the next 5 minutes. I'll be leaving Michael with some wonderful music, and I will be back with you tomorrow, no, Tuesday at 11 a.m. with Majid Ali, my friends. To all you guys out there, you know the thing you do when people, they do this fist-to-fist kind of handshake? You know, when a man puts up his fist at another man? It's called a DAP. That's what they call it. And they do it because men are afraid to really touch each other, you know what I mean? So they do this fist-to-fist. Well, I dap you all, and I'll hug you too.
Wow, the positive mind with Armand DeMille. A dap, eh? perhaps, maybe. For me is, I don't want to shake your hand. I don't know where that hand has been. That's for me. And I love the embrace. I love the male embrace. One of the things that I have a great affection for around here is some of the men. It's selective, no doubt. Around here, BAI, Hapte Selassie being one, and Grayson Challenger being another, feel quite comfortable in embracing those two.
Certainly agree with you.